Chapter 13. Not at home. In the meanwhile, the dwarves sat in darkness, and utter silence fell about them. Little they ate, and little they spoke. They could not count the passing of time, and they scarcely dared to move, for the whisper of their voices echoed and rustled in the tunnel. If they dozed, they woke still to darkness and to silence going unbroken. At last, after days and days of waiting, as it seemed, when they were becoming choked and dazed for want of air, they could bear it no longer. They would almost have welcomed sounds from the dragon below. In the silence, they feared some cunning devilry of his, but they could not sit here forever. Thorin spoke.
"Let us try the door," he said. "I must feel the wind on my face soon or die. I think I would rather be smashed by Smaug in the open than suffocate in here."
So several of the dwarves got up and groped back to where the door had been, but they found that the upper end of the tunnel had been shattered and blocked with broken rock. Neither key nor magic it had once obeyed would ever open that door again.
"We are trapped," they groaned. "This is the end. We shall die here."
But somehow, just when the dwarves were most desperate, Bilbo felt a strange lightening of the heart, as if a heavy weight had gone from under his waistcoat.
"Come, come," he said. "While there's life, there's hope. As my father used to say, third time pays for all.
I am going down to the tunnel once more. I have been there twice when I know where the dragon was at the other end, so I will risk a third visit when I am no longer sure. Anyway, the only way out is down, and I think it's time you had better all come with me." In desperation, they agreed, and Thorin was the first to go forward by Bilbo's side.
"Now do be careful," whispered the hobbit, "and as quiet as you can. There may be no Smaug at the bottom, but then again there may be. Don't let us take unnecessary risks."
Down, down they went. The dwarves could not, of course, compare with the hobbit in real stealth, and they made a deal of puffing and shuffling and echoes magnified alarmingly. But though every now and again Bilbo in fear stopped and listened, not a sound stirred below. Near the bottom, as well as he could judge, Bilbo slipped on his ring and went ahead, but he did not need it. The darkness was complete, and they were all invisible, ring or no. In fact, so black was it that the hobbit came to an opening unexpectedly, put his hand in the air, stumbled forward, and rolled headlong into the hall. There, he faced downwards on the floor and did not dare to get up, or hardly even breathe. But nothing moved. There was no gleam of light, unless, as it seemed to him, when at last he slowly raised his head, there was a pale white glint above him and far off in the gloom. But certainly it was not a spark of dragon fire, though the worm stench was heavy in this place, and the taste of his vapor was on their tongues. At length, Mr. Bilbo Baggins could hear it no longer.
"Confound you, Smaug, you worm," he squealed aloud. "Stop playing hide-and-seek. Give me a light, and then eat me if you can catch me."
Faint echoes ran round the hall, unseen. But there was no answer. Bilbo got up and found that he did not know in what direction to turn. "Now I wonder what on earth Smaug is playing at," he said. "He is not at home today, or tonight, or whatever it was. I do believe, if Oin and Gloin have not lost their tinderboxes, perhaps we can make a little light and have a look around before our luck turns."
"Light," he cried. "Can anybody make a light?"
The dwarves, of course, were alarmed when Bilbo felt forward towards the stump with a bump into the hall, and they sat huddled just where they had left them at the end of the tunnel.
"Shh, shh," they hissed.
And when they heard his voice, and though that helped the hobbit to find out where they were to stay, it was some time before he could get anything else out of them. But in the end, when Bilbo actually began to stomp on the floor and scream out, "Light!" at the top of his shrill voice, Thorin gave way, and Oin and Gloin were sent back to their bindles at the top of the tunnel. After a while, a twinkling gleam showed them returning Oin with a small pine torch alit in his hand, and Gloin with a bundle of others under his arm. Quickly, Bilbo trotted to the door and took the torch, but he could not persuade the dwarves to light the others or come with him and join him yet. As Thorin carefully explained, Mr. Baggins was still officially their expert burglar and investigator. If he liked to risk a light, that was his affair. They would wait in the tunnel for his report, so they sat near to the door and watched. They saw a little dark shape of the hobbit start across the floor, holding his tiny light aloft. Every now and again, while he was still near, they caught a glint of the twinkle as he stumbled on some gold thing. The light grew smaller as he wandered away into the vast tunnel. Then it began to rise, dancing in the air. Bilbo was climbing the great mount of treasure. Soon he stood atop and still went on. Then they saw him halt and stoop for a moment, but they did not know the reason. It was the Arkenstone, the heart of the mountain. So Bilbo guessed from Thorin's description, but indeed there
could not be two such gems, even in so marvelous a hoard, even in all the world. Even as he climbed with the same white gleam that had shone before him and drawn his feet towards him, slowly it grew to a little globe of pallid light. Now, as he came near, it was tinged with flickering sparks of many colors at the surface, reflecting and splintering from the wavering light of his torch. At last he looked down upon it, and he caught his breath. The great jewel shone before his feet of its own inner light, and yet, cut and fashioned by the dwarves who had dug it from the heart of the mountain long ago, it took all the light that fell upon it and changed it into 10,000 sparks of white radiance shot with glints of the rainbow. Suddenly, Bilbo's arm went towards it, drawn by its enchantment. His small hand would not close about it, for it was large and a heavy gem, but he lifted it, shut his eyes, and put it in his deepest pocket. Now I am a burglar indeed, he thought, but I suppose I must tell the dwarves about it, sometime. They did say that I could pick and choose my own share, and I think I would choose this if they all took the rest. All the same, he had an uncomfortable feeling that the picking and choosing had not really been meant to include this marvelous gem, and that trouble would yet come of it. Now he went on again. Down the other side of the great mountain he climbed, and the spark of its torch vanished from the sight of the watching dwarves. But soon they saw it far away in the distance again. Bilbo was crossing the floor of the hall. He went on until he came to the great doors at the further side, and there the draught of air refreshed him. But it almost puffed out his light. He peeped timidly through and caught a glimpse of the great passage and the dim beginnings of wide stairs going up to the gloom. And still there was no sight nor sound of smell. He was just going to turn back and go when a black shape swooped at him and brushed his face. He squeaked and started, stumbled backwards and fell. His torch dropped, head downwards, and went out. Only a bat, I suppose, and hope, he said miserably. But now what am I to do? Wishes east, south, north, or west? Thorin, Balin, Oin, Gloin, Feely, Keely, he cried out as loud as he could. It seemed a thin little noise in the wide blackness. The light's gone out. Someone come and find me and help me. For the moment his courage had failed altogether. Faintly, the dwarves heard his small cries, though the only word they could catch was help. Now what on earth, or under it, was there? Said Thorin, certainly not the dragon, or he would not be squeaking. They waited a moment or two, and still there was no dragon noises. No sound at all, in fact, except Bilbo's distant voice. Come, one of you, get another light or two, Thorin ordered. It seems we have to go and help our burglar. It is about our turn to help, said Balin, and I am quite willing to go. Anyway, I expect it is safe for the moment. Gloin lit several torches, and then they all crept out one by one and went along the wall as hurriedly as they could. It was not long before they met Bilbo himself coming back towards them. His wits had quickly returned as soon as he saw the twinkling of their torches. Only a bat and a drop torch, nothing else, nothing worse, he said in answer to their questions. Though they were much relieved, they were inclined to be grumpy at being frightened for nothing. But what would they have said if they told them at that moment about the Arkenstone? I don't know. The mere fleeting glimpse of the treasure which they had caught as they went along had rekindled all the fire of their dwarvish hearts. And when the heart of a dwarf, even the most respectable, is wakened by gold and gems, he grows suddenly bold and may become even fierce. The dwarves indeed no longer needed any urging. All were now eager to explore the hall while they had the chance, and willing to believe that, for the present, Smaug was away from home. Each now gripped a lighted torch, and as they gazed first on one side and then another, they forgot fear and even caution. They spoke aloud and cried out to one another, as they lifted the old treasures from mound or from the wall, and held them in the light, caressing and fingering them. Feely and Keely were almost in a merry mood, and finding still hanging there many golden hearts strung with silver, they took them out and struck them, and being magical and also untouched by the dragon, who had small interest in music, they were still in tune. But most of the dwarves were more practical. They gathered gems and stuffed their pockets, and let what they could not carry fall back through their fingers with a sigh. Thorin was not least among these, but always he searched from side to side for something he could not find. It was the Arkenstone. But he spoke of it, yet to no one. Now the dwarves took down mail and weapons from the walls and armed themselves. Royal indeed did Thorin look, clad in a coat of gold-painted rings with a silver hafted axe in his belt, crusted with scarlet stones. Mr. Baggins, he called, here's the first payment of your reward. Cast off your old coat and put on this. With that, he put Bilbo in a small coat of mail, wrought for some young elf prince long ago. It was silver steel, which the elves call Mithril, and with it a belt of pearls and crystals, a light helm of figured leather, strengthened beneath the hoops of steel, and studded about the brim with white gems was set to the hobbit's head. I feel magnificent, he thought, but I expect I look rather absurd. How would they laugh at me at the hill at home? Still, I wish there was a looking-glass handy. All the same, Mr. Baggins kept his head more clear of the bewitchment of the hoard than the dwarves did. Long before the dwarves were tired of examining the treasures, he became weary of it and sat down on the floor, and he began to wonder marvelously what the end of it would all be. I would give a good many of these precious goblets, he thought, for a drink of something cheering out of one of Bjorn's wooden bowls. Thorin, he cried aloud, what is next? We are armed, but what good has any armor ever been against Smaug the Dreadful? This treasure is not yet won back. We are not looking yet for gold, but a way for escape, and we have tempted luck too long. You speak the truth, answered Thorin, recovering his wits. Let us go. I will guide you. Not in 1,000 years should I forget the ways of this palace. Then he hailed the others, and they gathered together, and holding their torches above their heads, they passed through the gaping doors, not without a backward glance of longing. Their glittering mail they had covered again with their old coats, and their brightened helms with their tattering hoods, and one by one they walked behind Thorin, a line of little lights and darkness had halted often, listening in fear once more for any rumor of the dragon's coming, though all the old adornments were long moldered or destroyed, and though it was befouled and blasted with the comings and goings of that monster, Thorin knew every passage and every turn. They climbed the long stairs and turned and went down wide, echoing ways, and turned again and climbed yet more stairs, and yet more stairs again. These were smooth, cut out of living rock, broad and fair. And up, up the dwarves went, and they met no sign of any living thing, only furtive shadows that fled up the approach of their torches fluttering in the draughts. The steps were not made all the same for hobbit legs, and Bilbo was feeling that he could go on no longer, when suddenly the roof sprang high and far beyond the reach of the torchlights. A white glimmer could be seen coming through some opening far above, and the air smelt sweeter. Before the light came dimly through the great doors, that hung twisted on their hinges and half burnt. This is the great chamber of Thor, said Thorin, the hall of feasting and of council. Not far off now is the front gate. Then they passed through the ruined chamber. Tables were rotting there, chairs and benches there lying overturned, charred and decaying. Skulls and bones were on the floor amongst flagons and bowls of broken drinking horns and dust. As they came through yet more doors and further end, a sound of water fell upon their ears, and the gray light suddenly grew more full. There is the birth of the running river, said Thorin. From here it hastens to the gate. Let us follow it. Out of a dark opening in a wall of rocks there issued a boiling water, and it flowed swirling in a narrow channel, carved and made straight and deep and by cunning ancient hands. Beside it ran a stone-paved road, wide enough for many men abreast. Swiftly along this road they ran, and round a wide sweeping turn, and behold, before them stood the broad light of day. In front there rose a tall arch, still showing the fragments of old carven work within, worn and splintered and blackened though it was. A misty sun sent its pale light between the arms of the mountain, and the beams of gold fell on the pavement at the threshold. A whirl of bats, frightened from slumber by their smoking torches, flurried over them. As they sprang forward, their feet slithered on stones rubbed smooth and slimed by the passing of the dragon. Now, before them, the water fell noisily outward and foamed downwards toward the valley. They flung their pale torches to the ground and stood gazing with dazzling eyes. They were come to the front gate and were looking out at Dale. Well, said Bilbo, I never expected to be looking out this door, and I never expected to be so pleased to see the sun again and to feel the wind on my face. But oh, this wind is cold. It was. A bitter easterly breeze blew with a threat of oncoming winter. It swirled over and round the arms of the mountain into the valley and sighed among the rocks. After their long time in the stirring depths of the dragon-haunted caverns, they shivered in the sun. Suddenly, Bilbo realized that he was not only tired, but also very hungry indeed. It seemed to be late in the morning, he said, and I suppose it is more or less breakfast time, if there is any breakfast to have. But I don't feel that Smaug's front door is the safest place for a meal. Do, let's be somewhere else where we can sit for a while. Quite right, said Balin, and I think I know which way we should go. We ought to make for the old lookout post at the southwest corner of the mountain.
How far is that? Asked the hobbit.
5 hours' march, I should think. It would be a rough going. The road from the gate along the edge of the stream seems all broken up, but look down there. The river loops out suddenly east across Dale in front of the ruined town. At that point, there was once a bridge leading to the steep stairs that climbed up the right bank, and so to a road running towards Ravenhill. There is, or was, a path left to that road and climbed up to the post. A hard climb, too, even if the old steps are there.
Dear me, grumbled the hobbit. More walking and more climbing without breakfast. I wonder how many breakfasts and other meals we have missed inside this nasty, clockless, timeless hole.
As a matter of fact, 2 nights and a day had been between them and by, and not altogether without food, since the dragon smashed the magic door. But Bilbo had quite lost count of time, and it might have been 1 night or a week of nights, for all he could tell.
Come, come, said Thorin, laughing. His spirits had begun to rise, and he rattled the precious stone in his pockets. Don't call my palace a nasty hole. You wait till it has been cleaned and restored.
That won't be until Smaug's dead, said Bilbo glumly. In the meanwhile, where is he? I would give a good breakfast to know. I hope he is not up on the mountain looking down at us. That idea disturbed the dwarves mightily, and they quickly decided that Bilbo and Balin were right.
We must move away from here, said Dori. I feel as if his eyes were on my back right now.
It's a cold, lonesome place, said Bomber. There may be drink, but I see no sign of food. A dragon will always be hungry in such parts.
Come on, cried the others. Let us follow Balin's path.
Under the rocky wall to the right, there was no path. So on they trudged amongst the stones in the left side of the river, and the emptiness and desolation soon sobered even Thorin again. The bridge that Balin had spoken of, they found long fallen, and most of its stones were now on the boulders in the shallowy, noisy stream. But they forded the water without much difficulty, and found the ancient steps and climbed the high bank. After going a short way, they struck the old road, and before long came to a deep dell sheltered among the rocks. There they rested for a while and had such breakfast as they could. Chiefly, cram and water. If you know what cram is, I can only say I don't know the recipe, but it is biscuitish. Keeps good indefinitely, is supposed to be sustaining, and is certainly not entertaining, being in fact very uninteresting except as a chewing exercise. It was made by the lakemen for their long journeys. After that, they went on again, and now the road struck westward and left the river, and the great shoulder of the south-pointing mountain spur drew ever nearer. At length, they reached the hill path. It scrambled steeply up, and they plodded slowly one behind the other, till at last, the late afternoon, they came to the top of the ridge and saw the wintry sun going down westward. Here they found a flat place without walls on three sides, but backed up to the north by a rocky face in which there was an opening like a door. From the door, there was a wide view of east and south and west.
Here, said Balin, in the days of old we used to keep watchmen, and that door behind leads to the rock-hewn chamber that was made here as a guard-room. There were several places like it around the mountain, but they seemed small need for watching in the days of our prosperity, and the guards were made over-comfortable. Perhaps otherwise we might have had longer warning of the coming dragon, and things might have been different. Still, here we can now hide and lie sheltering for a while, and can see much without being seen.
Not much use if we have been seen coming up here, said Dori, who was always looking up towards the mountain's peak, as if he expected to see Smaug perched there like a bird on a steeple.
We must take our chance of that, said Thorin. We can go no further today.
Hear, hear, cried Bilbo, and flung himself on the ground. In a rock chamber there would have been room for 100, and there was a small chamber further in and further removed from the cold outside. It was quite deserted. Not even wild animals seemed to use it in all the days of Smaug's dominion. There they laid in their burdens, and some threw themselves down at once and slept, but the others sat near the outer door and discussed their plans. In all their talk, they came perpetually back to one thing. Where was Smaug? They looked west, and there was nothing, and east there was nothing, and south there was no sign of the dragon. But there was a gathering of many birds, and that they gazed and wondered, but they could no nearer understanding it. When the first cold stars came up.